Your legs are crazy. I mean, they're so like so trim and so muscular and like
Yes, Paige works
working.
out a lot.
I know, and they have great legs. Oh my God.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pass the Power with me, Paige Parker. I'm so excited you're listening and maybe even watching on Spotify or our new YouTube channel, as we share conversations of hope with today's thought leaders as together we pass the power. So if you follow my Instagram or my TikTok, you know I adore fashion. I see it as a powerful form of personal expression. And today we're talking all things fashion with Andrew Nguyen, Singapore's most acclaimed fashion talent. He left Singapore and attended the renowned St. Martin's School of Art and Design in London, then Milan's prestigious Domus Academy, and after receiving his master's in 1992, Andrew accepted the offer to assist Emmanuel Angaro in Paris. Soon after, in 1996, Andrew decided to strike out on his own, launching his own namesake collection, and he's known for his cross-cultural East meets West design aesthetic. He has plush fabrics, exuberant colors, and your detailing is on couture level. I think your ready-to-wear is spectacular. You draw from history, architecture, decorative arts, and women. So Andrew, most of the audience out there, unfortunately, they don't know a lot about you. And after this retrospective that we're doing at Asian Civilizations Museum, they're gonna know a lot more. But can you tell the listeners and the viewers, who is the real Andrew Nguyen?
Wow. Hi, Paige. And thank you for inviting me to your podcast. Well, to most of my close friends, I'm known as Panda Bear. Panda, that's my nickname. Because I think I'm very friendly, cuddly. I love to eat and I make people smile.
So Panda Bear kind, Andrew.
Yes.
I love it. Well, for me, when I think about fashion, I think that I'm happy that we've gotten to a point in culture where fashion is no longer seen as frivolous.
Yes, absolutely.
Respected as an art form.
Absolutely.
We see it as a bridge between representing culture and society.
Yes.
And because of that, Asian Civilizations Museum will start collecting fashion, and in particular, Singapore fashion. And we have the retrospective with, I think, 150 of your pieces.
112 outfits. I donated 160.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
And so you're definitely a big part of the Singapore story at ACM. But again, I feel when we think about Singapore fashion designers, because you left and became an international fashion designer, you know, your name doesn't come to the fore. How does it feel to come home and know that your pieces are being shown in Singapore at home?
I would say I'm very honored and very emotional. When the museum director of ACM, Kenny Ting, alongside with the chief curator, Jackie, came and speak to me before the pandemic, they were talking about how to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the museum. And they thought it might coincide with my 25th anniversary. And the COVID hit, and here we are. But I must say that it's nothing more rewarding than being honored by your own country and by your own people. I want to thank ACM here for giving me this opportunity to tell my story of a Singaporean designer based in Paris, his story, his fashion journey, how I struggled and how I you know, come to where I am today.
It's glamorous, and your pieces have been worn by the most, you know, famous actresses and royalty. We even have Emily in Paris. She's now going to wear another piece, right? She wore
yes.
one piece of yours.
We started working on the costumes for season 3. Yeah, because it was season 2, right? I remember.
Yeah.
And 3 and 4, they've just signed on for 2 more seasons.
So I guess most people walking through will only think that you went from strength to strength, is my point.
It's true that through very beautiful clothing and very glamorous sort of red carpet situations, you hardly think about the struggle, but I did struggle in the very beginning. It was really hard. I borrowed 20,000 Singapore dollars from my father to start my business. And that's how I got started.
And how long did it take you to pay him back?
It took me about 5 years, even for that small amount of money, because, you know, we're always struggling with the finance of the company. and then also trying to find people to pick up the collections and all that. So in the beginning, it was really hard.
Well, can you tell us briefly what led you to fashion? I mean, you're a boy growing up in Singapore. It's not an aspiration for most to become a fashion designer. So what happened? Was it your mama?
Always the mama. And my mama used to go and see her Chinese tailor in Chinatown. And she'll bring all the fabric. My dad will be traveling around in Southeast Asia. He'll be bringing back a lot of beautiful fabrics from Indonesia, from China, silk and batik and kimonos from Japan. And it was incredible that to see all this 2D fabrics being transformed into 3D clothing. My mother would spend hours discussing with a tailor how the details of a chongsam or a tailleur, whether she'd be using a double pipings, trimmings, whether she should use the fabric, the self-fabric froggings, or does she need a belt. So as a child, I was always attending the session with my mom and her tailor. I'd be listening and observing. That was the very beginning. And my mother was my first fashion muse. And then these were actually my first fashion lessons. I was only 3 or 4 and I started observing. And I told myself, I want to do something with dresses when I grow up. And I started drawing. And it all started like that.
Well, Central St. Martin's is one of the best, if not the best,
school
in the world. So how did you find out about that when you're here in the plus 6-5?
During the army, I was actually freelancing for designers like Acetate and Celia Lowe. That date went all the way back to the 80s. And I remember for the Singapore Fashion Week, they brought someone down from London, someone called Michael Rosen, an extremely intelligent and extraordinary person to come and style and produce a show. And I was going to see him with Acetate. So I got to speak to him and I told him what I wanted to do. So he said, you know, the best actually is St. Martin's. And then you can always apply for Kingston or London College of Fashion. But I went straight to St. Martin's. I was accepted into the college. Because I spent about 6 months preparing a portfolio.
And then when you were there, didn't you win one of the top awards?
Yeah, I won the French Connection Award. It was a very interesting moment for me because London was booming with ideas and creativity. It was not as rich as today. You know, people didn't have lots of money, but all of us were like living fashion, like 200%. We'd go to the coffee bar. You know, we'll eat a Kit Kat and smoke cigarettes for lunch and a coffee. And then we spend all the money, we'll save all the money to buy a Comme des Garçons or Yoji suit so that we can actually wear them during the weekends to club out in Daisy Chain and Brixton, for example, attending all the concerts.
But when you were singing, you didn't have much money and like you were saving money for the designer things. I feel like so often we think we need money to have style, but you don't. You can be incredibly stylish and very fashionable.
Absolutely.
And not have on a designer look.
We were mixing designers labels with that we normally usually buy on sales or markdown with vintage pieces from Camden Town.
Yeah,
that's how we dress as a fashion student.
I think it's all incredibly fascinating.
Yeah,
we're going to move on to a memorable moment that we've had in fashion. And I couldn't decide on one, so I have two. Oh. And the first is last September in New York at Fashion Week with my daughter, Hilton.
Yes.
When you're a mom and you have a child who does anything with you like this, it just makes it exponentially better. And then we went to the Tom
Absolutely.
Ford show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it was, you know, one of his final shows because he's just sold his company, as you know.
I must praise you. You look absolutely wonderful in that sparkly dress, the Tom Ford dress.
It was incredible. But before the show, I took Hilton to Madison Avenue. She's never owned a piece of Tom Ford. I don't dress her in designer kind of clothes. She's 19 years old, but I took her to Tom Ford and I was like, okay, honey, buy an outfit. She went straight to these black stiletto boots and the outfit was all about the boots and she looked amazing and her dress was about this. It was so short and she had a big leather Tom Ford jacket right. with it. I mean, it was such a look and she looked amazing. So that was like incredible. And I think my second most memorable fashion moment would have to be last summer in Paris when we were packing up the pieces of your archive and to have, you know, the curators and the workers there in gloves.
Remember that, yes.
Packing up piece by piece, box by box, the tissues, all so delicately to make sure that it made its way, everything made its way to Singapore in perfect condition for this big event that we're having at ACM. You don't think about the massive amount of time, energy, the scale, the people input, all of that that goes into something like this. People just walk in and see the beautiful dresses.
I know. There's a lot of work behind.
How many pieces do you have in the archive?
I did 85 collections in my life. So each collection is between 120 to 150 pieces. Wow. Garments, outfits we're talking about. So that makes about 10,000 pieces.
Gosh.
Yeah, I know. It's a huge archives. And it was very emotional for me. They're like my babies. Mm-hmm. We spend so much time studying and researching and, you know, making all these samples. They're like my babies, and I've not seen them for a long time. So it was quite a moment to see them again. It was very emotional. And that's why I named my Autumn Winter 2023 as Roots, because it's all about going back to the roots of the house.
I didn't realize that. So it was all because you were going back to the archive.
Absolutely.
And so you were like fed again, yes, from, yes, the past.
Yes. In fact, we were planning to go into another direction, something way very different. And I saw that. I said, you know what? To celebrate my homecoming and also to go back to the roots is about going to back to my roots. So I use that as my inspiration to build my Autumn Winter 2023 collection.
And I read an interview where you were talking about how, because fashion has evolved and changed so much. And when I went back, because I went on Vogue Runway and I looked at all of your past collections, all the pieces you've done. And in the past, there was more kind of embroidery and intricacy, I think. And you were saying that part of that is because people are shopping online and you have 6 seconds.
Five
seconds, you know, for a person to make a decision.
Decide,
and if it's,
yes,
too complicated and actually just you have to click and zoom in on it.
Yes, yes.
And they've already scrolled on to the,
yeah,
next,
absolutely,
thing. So how has that changed your design aesthetic?
Well, I think the evolution into e-commerce has actually changed a lot of things. We are talking a lot about the screen appeal. And the first time I heard that term was from a wonderful lady. Her name is Ruth Chapman, the owner of Matches Fashion.
I shop on fashion.
Yeah, Matches Fashion,
yeah,
I think, is a wonderful website.
Yeah.
Wonderfully curated. And she was telling me that, Andrew, do you realize that, Andrew, you know that women only had 6 seconds to decide five.
Mm.
Sorry, she said five. Only 5 seconds to decide whether she's going to swipe through and go into your products and shop. So you need to make sure that the color is vibrant enough that people could see clearly from afar, from this on the screen, the details, that is not too ornate, and the rapport of quality and prices are right.
Mm.
So that really changed the way I think. After that, my assistant would be holding a piece of garment 5 meters away from the mirror, and we all look into the mirror to see whether that piece of garment looks great in the mirror.
Mm.
And that's what we call screen appeal. Mm. It's how we decide whether it's going to sell or not on the screen.
Well, for the listeners out there, let's give a plug to Farfetch, who is the fashion patron for our gala.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Farfetch. And what other online retailers, where can people find you?
We work with pretty much everyone. We work with Net-a-Porter, Matches, Farfetch. We also work with Moda Operandi. And we're also available on sex.com,
Bergdorf. Linda's
Neiman's,
a big fan of yours.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I believe that I saw on your stories, you actually went to visit Linda's store.
I did.
And she had it at Mike outfit right in front.
Your gown
of
was front and center. And I took a picture and sent you. I was like, oh my gosh, Andrew, here I am in New York.
Yes.
And this Singapore born designer, you know, who moved to Paris, is featured front and center at Bergdorf's, which,
yeah,
is probably the finest shopping place in New York.
There, I think Bergdorf was one of the very first retailer and major retailer in America who picked Andrew Gaines up. I think they picked me up in 2000.
And was that because of Linda?
Well, it was Linda, James, they're going to meet because he's coming to the gala and the opening. And also Elizabeth Vandergott.
Yes.
Who's
I follow her. I'm
with,
one of her.
With Farfetch. They're all flying down to celebrate me. This is the little AGN family.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited. So next we're going to talk about a daily challenge in fashion.
Ooh.
And I think the biggest challenge for most of us who are consuming fashion now is we think about sustainability. It's on everybody's lips, right?
Absolutely.
And also the conditions of those who are making our clothes and considering what kind of the factory that they're sitting in.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess those are the things when I think about daily challenges.
My challenge would be to stay relevant as a fashion designer. It's fashion, as you know, is changing so rapidly, and it's changing even more rapidly now. I need to reinvent myself all the time to keep up with the speed while staying true to myself, following the line. To do that continuously for the past 28 years is really tough. It's really tough. And so that's my daily challenge, is how to be relevant.
How do you do that? Are there certain people or places or things that kind of spark you so that you can make an idea more modern or more relevant, as you're saying? I mean, how do you do that?
I live my life and I have a lot of young people around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I love young people.
Me too.
And I think they bring so much life to me. And they're the news breaker. They bring the news to you, the new things.
Mm-hmm.
I spend about 15 to 30 minutes every day on my social media. So I'm watching and I'm looking at what people are wearing. I follow a lot of influencers. And also, I have lots of different interests. I'm interested in movies. I'm interested in nature. I read a lot. And so I presume that really helps in keeping me well informed of what's going on in the world.
Are you willing to tell us who three of the influencers you follow?
I follow Lin Ban.
Uh-huh.
And I've known her for a long time.
Lin Ban is a Singaporean.
Yes.
She was doing just jewelry, but I think she's doing more than that now.
She started off collecting and dealing with vintage clothing. So she's got spectacular things. And if it Lin is really interesting, she'll buy like something that she fancies and she'll wear it a couple of years later and she makes it relevant. And it's that spirit that I really, really love. And we are very close.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, at one point, Lin was helping me to style the collection.
She's a bit like Daphne Guinness.
Yes,
because they are both beyond being a fashionista.
Yeah.
They take it to an art form.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And I find inspiration from her too. Yeah. Anyone else besides Lynn?
I also follow Daphne Guinness, of course. And I find her wonderful. Mm. And I think a lot of people find her wonderful. And like what you said, it's not a pure influencer. And you know that she's not trying to sell you something.
Mm.
I do not like it when someone is trying to sell me something. I think that these two are... I follow a whole bunch of people, but worth mentioning would be Daphne Guinness, and Lin Ban.
I want to push you a little bit more because we were talking about a daily challenge for shopping now as we think about fast fashion and sustainability. I mean, what are your thoughts on fast fashion?
Well, you see, fast fashion is absolutely the contrary of the principle and the motto of the House of Andrew Ginn. But you see, there are companies like Uniqlo, which is good because, you know, I buy their sweaters and t-shirt as well. But otherwise, I do not want to drop names. There are lots of parasites out there who copy our designs of all the designers.
They copy so quickly.
They copy so quickly before we can actually launch a collection. They within 2 weeks, you know, after Paris Fashion Week, they're out there in the window. It's disgusting. It's so disgusting. And I'm always speechless when I walk past a window and see one of my designs in their window and say, oh my God, you know, how could they do that?
Besides the copying though, there's the pollution.
The pollution, overproducing and treating people working with them with no respect and underpaying them and with horrible working condition. producing in certain places. I mean, it's such an irony. In certain places, they really need to work. They do provide work, but it's not the right way to treat human beings working for them. So I'm completely against fast fashion.
So for all those people walking down Orchard Road,
yes,
who are wearing complete head-to-toe fast fashion, they should stop and pause. They should...
No, I'm not saying that they should stop shopping, because in a way, I remember when I was a student, I shopped, it was way before I could actually shop online. So we'd go to Camden Town, we'd go to secondhand markets, anything you can find, and we would recycle and for example, we'll buy two pieces of garments and try to create our own thing. And why not sewing your own clothes? Invest in a secondhand sewing machine. Start making clothes. And this is the way we used to do. You want something, you make something. But it's not that difficult. You have time. Instead of spending all your time on Netflix and watch one series less, and make a skirt for yourself or make a dress.
I bet 99.999% of the people listening and watching this podcast do not have a sewing machine at home.
Go out and get yourself a sewing machine now. It's a great investment.
So I thought it would be really interesting for us to talk about some lessons or a lesson we've learned from fashion. I thought that I would offer 8 tips for investing in fashion.
8 tips?
And they are lessons that, you know, lessons I've learned have taught me these. And you're welcome to comment on each one.
I've only one.
Okay. You're welcome to comment on all my 8. The first is to buy quality fabric.
Yes, absolutely.
So what does that mean?
It means that you buy something that really lasts, very well woven. It's also what we call rond in French. It's round, like the crepe you're wearing. And it's so it's a fabric that really lasts. It's funny you talk about that, because the Rothschild used to say that we are too poor to buy bad qualities. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with them.
So yeah. My second is know your body and buy a style that suits you.
Oh my God, this is so right, yeah. And only yourself would know what looks good on you or not.
Because you see, like in the magazines, it's editorial and it looks absolutely amazing on the woman, but the woman is like rail thin, 6'2",
yeah,
and I can't wear it. You know, it's like, you know my friend Max Tan, the fashion designer.
Yes, yes.
And for a very long time, his aesthetic was very full. And I said to him, it looks great on a glamazon, but somebody like me who's petite and has boobs.
It's a lot of,
I look just frumpy and full. Yeah, so I said, could you make me something fitted?
Yeah.
Please, you know, I go to the gym for a reason.
That I completely agree with you.
The third is buy less, but buy better.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's completely my point. Yeah.
And I think you don't produce a lot of pieces in a run.
No.
So I think people also have the luxury of when they buy you, it's you're not going to see a whole lot of these
everywhere,
pieces running
around. Yes.
So that definitely falls into the buy better. And the fourth is to don't be a snob, because it doesn't have to be expensive to be good.
High and low. I always believe in that. Yeah. High and low.
Yeah. Because for me, every time I go home to North Carolina where my parents are, I go to Target, I head straight to Target, and I buy my exercise bras, my cotton socks, and my cotton panties for exercise, because why am I going to pay $1 zillion for those
absolutely
things?
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
Target all the way.
Yes.
And the fifth is, if it's on sale, i.e. cheap, but you don't love it, don't buy it.
A lot of people actually overspend by buying like things on markdown, and I think it's so silly, just because it's like 50% markdown, you feel that you got to have it, and a week later you say, why did I buy that, right?
How many deals are in the closet that we're not wearing?
Unfortunately, I made quite a few mistakes like that when I was young. So
Me too.
Don't buy cheap. No, don't buy markdown unless that he is really speaking to you and you try it and make sure that you think twice about it. Absolutely.
The sixth is, if you don't want to work to style your separates, then you should buy dresses or complete looks, or know what you're going to wear the blouse or the skirt or the trousers with in your existing wardrobe before you buy it and take it home.
I completely agree with you.
Because I've had, more times than I even want to mention, that I have bought a piece that I loved. I actually have a piece at home now. that I probably bought 6 years ago and I haven't worn it because I can't figure out how to wear it.
Match it with anything else. Yeah, I know.
I love the piece, but I just can't make it work. So I tend to be in dresses quite a bit, or jumpsuits, or like it's a full set. Like I love Hermes, like pajamas, you know, like matching top and trousers kind of thing. And it's because I'm lazy. You know, it takes work if you're really going to style each outfit.
Absolutely.
And the seventh is if you see something that resonates, you buy it for the future because the time will come when you want to wear it.
I completely agree with that as well.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of time, women, I always advise people to say, it's difficult to shop for gowns, long dresses. And if you see a really good one that suits you, that you think of it as an investment, you always buy it and wait for the occasion to come. And this is a great way, because when you have an occasion and you're always looking high and low, you never find anything that suits you. So I would really advise a woman to buy something when you see something that really suits you, you know?
Agree. Some people are like, how did you have that? I'm like, I've had it forever.
Forever.
I've just been waiting for the right time.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Shopping my own wardrobe.
Yeah. And the last is many mirrors lie.
Ooh.
And salespeople often work on commission. So if you're looking in the mirror and you're like thinking,
oh yeah, yeah, I know that
I'm
trick.
Not this thin.
You come out and they say, oh my God, what's wrong? Oh my God, you look so chic.
Yeah. And you're like, really? Are you sure?
I know. Yeah. I know.
So when your gut tells you, you don't, maybe listen to your gut. Okay. So you tell us the lesson you've learned.
Well, I've only got one point. You know, when I started, I was talking about it just now. I didn't have a lot of money. I borrowed a bit of money from my dad. And what I wanted to do is to design a perfect t-shirt of extremely good quality and a perfect sweater, because I wear these two all the time. I wear a t-shirt. So I started off doing a t-shirt in really good Egyptian cotton with the perfect neckline, and in a sweater in cashmere and silk. And I started selling them to Barney's. Remember Barney's?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the legendary store, Maria Luisa in Paris. And so after that, I've started adding blouses, bottoms, dresses, gowns, jackets, and coats.
So tell me this. I think you have a men's collection coming out for the first time next year.
Yes.
So will there be t-shirts?
Loads of t-shirts, loads of knits. A lot of beautiful double-faced cashmere coat. And they're kind of gender neutral. Basically, I wanted to create a great basic wardrobe for men, which is functional, comfortable, and stylish at the same time. And it's difficult to find that. It's difficult to find something very chic and very simple they can wear during the weekends or go hunting, you know, hunting weekends in Scotland. And, you know, it's difficult to find something that you go out for lunch, for brunch with your girlfriends or your wives, you know. So I want to do something quite casual, very functional, very wearable, but very, very stylish.
But they sound like things that I'd like to wear.
Yes.
Are you going to have like an extra, extra small to fit them?
Yes. Yes. We actually are grading anything from 0 to size 20.
Because it sounds like it's a men's collection, but you're going to have a lot of women who are also quite keen for those, especially when you're talking about like
little
the
suits and little jackets. Yes, we're doing that as well.
Oh.
Yeah. We call it AGN neutral. We've not decided on the name, but instead of calling it gender fluid, it's gender neutral.
So it's not going to be men's.
It's more men's, okay. But then a woman, on certain days, you feel like wearing that.
Like an oversized jacket is great.
Oversized jacket is cute, yeah.
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 Especially over something quite sexy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A little black dress.
So that will come out in January.
In January. Yeah, we're taking our time to study the collection.
Will it be big, the collection?
No, it won't be that big. No, it's like 50 or 60 designs, so.
And the next we're going to talk about is our hot take on fashion. And mine is definitely that there are so many Singaporean designers who are trying to make a living here. And if we can support local fashion, we should. And there are a few ways we can do it. You can follow Singapore Fashion Council on Instagram. You can follow, there's an account on Instagram I love. It's called Orchard Road Fashion.
And I didn't follow that. I must follow. Is that the handle?
Yeah, Orchard and they just have fashionable people walking down Orchard Road. It's a hoot.
I love that.
I love it. And then there's a physical store on Orchard Road called Design Orchard, which has a lot of local designers on display. And I think if we can support local, we should. And I think the idea of supporting, you know, international designers and mixing with Singapore brands is a very cool way to style our own fashionable wardrobe. And two brands I love, Max Tun. Hmm. I love everything Max is doing. And also The Missing Piece. She was a lawyer.
I didn't know about Missing Piece.
Eileen was a lawyer and she followed her passion to design.
Is it not Stolen?
No.
No, okay.
I like Stolen very much.
Yeah.
But The Missing Piece started off where she would have a missing piece in the jumpsuit. There was always a missing piece on it. And she just makes, and it's a very approachable price point.
Right.
It's an easy, like, mom dress. It's an easy Saturday dress and good quality.
What is the price point of Max Tun?
Max is more expensive. I would say anywhere from maybe 800 to, or 500 to maybe 1200.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's been doing quite a bit of costume design.
Yes,
for many companies here. And he won Costume Designer of the Year.
Yeah.
But he's working on a new collection now.
Yeah. I spoke to Ivan. I was telling him how much I love the costumes he did for Butterfly Lovers.
Oh, it was so great.
Yeah. Yeah,
you will have to see it at some point.
Yeah, I have to see it at one point. I just missed it.
I was
so arrived too late, yeah.
Yeah, I told Ivan that to see this piece, a Chinese opera, sung in English, you know, produced by an Australian opera company, and then
modern music.
Yes, yeah. and then you know, Wild Rice to come in and be a partner in this, and to have it on the Singapore stage.
Yeah,
it was sold out every night.
Yes, I was told. I was told.
So proud of Singapore.
I was told.
Very, very proud. Your hot take.
My hot take. I was struggling as a designer in Paris. I would like to set up a foundation or an association. And I really think that we could do something to help the young designers to understand more about marketing, about the products, about distribution. So the business part of it. Because I realized that from my personal experience, for example, the first time I sold to Barney's, they were going to open something called letter of credits and paying by that. And I have absolutely no clue what letter of credits was. And I was calling my dad, trying to fill out the forms, trying to get my money. And my dad was telling me the money you're spending on your trunk call costs as much as your letter of credits. And so I think the business part for a young business, a young designer, is very, very crucial. And
would this foundation be, would it be Singapore centric or it would be for Singapore designers all over the world?
It could be that or any international designers.
Ah.
Yeah, for all the major cities, Singapore, Indonesia, or even like Paris or London. I think it should be international because you could also have a Singaporean designer based in London who has problems. I'm actually at a point where I feel like I really want to give back to the fashion world, the fashion community, and we should really help each other. Because Elizabeth and a couple of her friends, Elizabeth von der Gotte, are going to meet from Farfetch, set up a foundation helping young black designers who has a lot of problems of getting recognition, of fun and all that. So they set something up to help people. And I felt that, you know, we should be helping people who are just starting.
Because I know with the Council of Fashion Designers of America, CFDA, I think they're at a level where you've already kind of
absolutely
reached a certain point by the time they're interested in you.
Even their incubators be quite established,
right?
And also they don't help everyone. I'm sorry to say, they help people that they like, and I feel that everybody needs a chance. We should help anybody who needs help.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So it's not kind of angel investing in a fashion brand.
It's about helping
the whole education.
Because I was in fashion college and never taught me anything about business. And I was constantly designing for a woman that didn't really exist at school. And you realize that in reality, you know, you are a customer. You are the customer right there. And you know, it's so important to identify your own niche talk about a market segment. If you're going for a niche, you're going for contemporary fashion. And I didn't really know what contemporary fashion was, what couture was, what luxury ready-to-wear was. And because in America, you're being, you know, classified in many, many different ways. So you have Missy dresses, you have sportswear, American sportswear, European couture, you know. So all that needs to be learned. And you need to decide where is your segment of market. It's just little things like that.
Well, how did you decide yours? Because you started off with Ungaro and you were working with these kind of Parisian designers. So you went...
I'm easy. I'm a sucker for luxury. Mm. So I just want to start high. Yeah. I could never imagine myself
too glam to give a damn.
Yeah, I'm too glad to give a damn. I'm just like, why would I want to give up my sparkly bits?
Right.
And my silk, my triple crepe, my cashmere. Yeah, I love luxury, and this has always been my motto.
Well, now there's all this talk of silent luxury after
Gwyneth.
Yes,
absolutely. And in fact, my menswear is almost like silent luxury. It's what we call the inner luxe. For example, when your coat is lined in a beautiful silk, only you yourself would know.
I have a red croc Goyard clutch, and on the inside it says made to order for Paige Parker.
And there you
nobody
go.
Knows
oh there you go
nobody knows
it's for yourself. Yeah,
but you know that's yeah. kind of cool, right?
That's true luxury, actually. Yeah, yeah.
So I have a few questions I want to ask you. I'm supposed to ask you one, but I'm going to ask a few. The first is, do you think that a designer based in Singapore now who has real talent has to leave still to become an international fashion designer?
Well, it comes back to the point that we should really create a community, because I think a lot of people do not see Singapore as a fashion capital. When you talk about fashion capitals, you think about Paris, you think about London, you think about New York. In the northern Scandinavian countries, like, you know, Sweden or Denmark, they have their own segment, their own market. I think that, first of all, I think we should really help, is where my association would come in, to try to create a community and tell the whole world that we could be a fashion capital. Despite the fact that we are very small, we don't need to produce locally. We could always have it produced elsewhere, but it's designed by Singapore. And I really hope that my retrospective exhibition will bring a lot of people to that path, the art and fashion path.
And this foundation, this learning environment, this group that you're talking about, could that be what brings you home to Singapore?
Well, coming back means something to me. You know, I want to give back. And I really think that I should do something about it. And I went to the LaSalle graduation show. The standard was very high. The standard is very, very high. Very well-produced shows and lots of great designers, and we should really capitalize on that. You know, we have talent. Singapore has talent.
Can you just drop like a few names of the people you've dressed? Flex, flex, flex.
Flex, flex, flex. we dressed Lady Gaga, Beyonce, Janelle, Awkwafina, Yang Mi, Jane Chang, Zhang Liangying, Gong Li. We dressed Queen Rania. We even dressed Hillary Clinton, Princess Mary of Denmark. So the list goes on.
And some of these pieces will be on display.
Absolutely.
At the museum.
Yes,
so
yes,
you can see
yes.
all of these
and
great pieces.
And the red carpet section.
Yeah,
yes.
And the red carpet. So there's red carpet. There is kind of
a huge Asian section, because a lot of my work inspired by Southeast Asia. So it's this East Asia, West Asia, and all that in Central Asia. And we also have Andragan inspired by the West, all the art movements. And then there's a craft section. And that's interesting because it shows how we use different techniques in our atelier to make lace, to make buttons, to make trimmings, to do a lace inset and all that. So it's a very interesting and very well curated exhibition. It really, really display a very diversified choices of my work.
Excellent. I can't wait for everyone to go and see the exhibition and to just understand that fashion deserves to be in a museum because it is indeed art.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, contemporary fashion.
Do you have a question for me, Andrew?
I do. What do you do with your archive? Do you always keep them forever, or do you sometimes, what do you do?
I think for my pieces that really resonate with me, I have quite a bit of storage.
Okay.
Yeah, so I keep them. And pieces, it's interesting, I will take something that I haven't worn in like 2 or 3 years, but I still love, and I will store it. But after maybe another 2 years, I'll bring it back. It's like I have a new wardrobe.
That's a good point, yes.
And so I'm constantly kind of bringing back something that I haven't worn in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, oh, this is so fresh. I love this. It's like a new dress.
Yes.
Interestingly, on TikTok, I keep getting people saying, could you please tell us, number one, how you keep your clothes in such good condition?
Yes.
You know, that you can wear it 15
years
later.
Yes.
And how in the world you do store all of these pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something that I know, you know, hasn't really worked for me, haven't worn it that much, then I'll try to find a new home for it.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
If you don't have any use for it, you might as well, you know, find a new parents union.
Yeah.
And a new owner.
Vestiaire was one that I was selling some of my pieces through
them.
Yes,
yes.
And then we also, I'm on the board for United Women Singapore.
Do you do Real Real as well?
I don't
Sometimes
do Real
Real. Sometimes you don't do Real Real.
Yeah. Okay. It's difficult from Singapore to do Real Real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But as a board member of United Women Singapore, we have Buy to Save, where we take donated pieces. So if it's something that is, you know, and bags sell so well there, people will pay crazy amounts for bags. So sometimes my things go to United Women Singapore so they can find a new home.
That's good. I like to hear that.
Yeah. And also we're very grateful. The museum is incredibly grateful for your gift. Because as we do start to collect fashion, you have been, a huge catalyst in this whole kind of, you've been our startup. You've been our angel investor, you know, by giving us almost 200 pieces.
We've got to start somewhere,
yeah.
Right? So I'm glad that I can actually contribute to really the base of collection of the museum. And I truly think that collecting contemporary fashion is important because it also draws younger people into the museum.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're so grateful that you've kept them, and everybody is going to be blown away when they walk through the exhibition and
hope
see your work.
I hope so, yes.
For sure.
Yes.
So it runs until the 17th of September at the Asian Civilizations Museum. Make sure you get there and you can message me and let me know what you think. That wraps another exciting episode of Pass the Power with me, Paige Parker. So thank you, Andrew, for being here. And I want everybody out there listening and watching to go to ACM and see this retrospective because they're going to be blown away by your talent and your craft.
Thank you, Paige, for having me.
I'm delighted to have you along with us, and I hope we can keep on keeping on together, passing the power one episode at a time.